From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. So far, letters stuffed with anthrax spores have killed 3 people and infected at least 9 others. And that's been enough to disrupt thousands of people's lives and spread fear across the country. Now, public health officials are trying to plan in detail how they would contain a contagious disease like plague or smallpox. They say the chances of an outbreak are small, but they warn that a disorganized response could overwhelm law enforcement agencies and threaten civil liberties. Daniel Zwerdling reports for NPR News and American Radio Works.
Exactly how would communities contain a smallpox outbreak, and what problems could they expect to face? Health specialists have been trying to answer those questions by looking back in history to see how societies battled natural epidemics, and they found some of the most dramatic lessons in Yugoslavia. Back in 1972, more than 150 people there came down with smallpox. The government's leaders asked a man named D.A. Henderson to rush to their country to help. He says he went straight from the airport to meet them.
When I walked in the room, I remember it very well. They were really very panicky. And it is really a hideous disease in terms of just visibly ugly. And when you're seeing 30% of the patients dying, and in with nothing really we can do for them, this does become extremely frightening to people, and understandably so.
At the time, Henderson worked for the World Health Organization. He was leading the international campaign that eventually stamped out natural sources of smallpox. Today, he runs the Center for Civilian Biodefense Studies at Johns Hopkins University, and he's trying to prevent terrorists from bringing smallpox back. Smallpox is one of the most contagious diseases. If you walk within 6 to 9 feet of somebody who's already sick, you can get the disease from inhaling their germs. Henderson says by the time he got to Yugoslavia, the nation's leaders had walled off the victims from the rest of the population. They imposed a giant quarantine.
The patients were taken to a particular hospital. They were isolated there, and they had the whole hospital, physicians, nurses, staff were quarantined right there, so that they went in and they stayed. And then they isolated about 10,000 people who had been in contact with the patients. They vaccinated them, and then they took over hotels and apartment blocks. They cordoned them off with barbed wire and what have you. They stationed police there so that anybody that went in could not come out again until 2 weeks had passed.
Prison camps, in essence, health prison camps.
Yes, that's right. It was heroic measures that they took.
You might be thinking, this sounds far-fetched. America's leaders would never even think about rounding up sick people and seizing property. They'd never seal off neighborhoods with armed guards. But they are thinking about it. In fact, just 2 weeks before September 11th, officials at the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, drafted a blueprint for fighting an outbreak. They call it the Bioterrorism Preparedness and Response Project. And the CDC document specifically warns government leaders that they should be prepared to take over private property and impose quarantines. They might need to quarantine geographical areas, as the plan puts it. CDC officials didn't return our phone calls to talk about the plan. Of course, Yugoslavia was a communist police state. The dictator and military did pretty much what they wanted, and civilians generally complied. Researchers warned that this country would face a lot more hurdles. Consider what happened when smallpox hit Muncie, Indiana in 1893.
What they decided to do is to quarantine each home in which there was a case of smallpox. And they would put a yellow cardboard sign up on the front of the house saying smallpox.
William Itzen retired recently as a historian at Ball State University. He dug up Muncie's old records to trace what happened, and he says the quarantine made things worse. Itzen says the disease showed up first in low-income neighborhoods. The government sealed them off.
And then they would have an armed guard who had either had smallpox or had been vaccinated guarding the front of the house so that the family was not to come outside beyond their yard or to no one else was to come in. Well, people violated that left and right. There would be neighbors come in from the back, or the family would move out into the back and go to other people's houses. Simply put, what we call domicile quarantine did not work.
The smallpox epidemic kept spreading. So city officials set aside an entire hospital just for smallpox patients, and they ordered everybody who was sick to move there.
Well, there was a great deal of difficulty getting people to go to the hospital. One case, an irate father fired a rifle and wounded a man who'd come to take his son, his infected son, to the hospital. Some health officials broke down doors and went into the houses of the infected people and literally dragged those people out.
More than 100 years have passed, but law enforcement specialists worry that they'd have trouble controlling panicky citizens today. Captain Michael Jones is the number two officer in the police force that guards Virginia's state capital. He trains officers from around the country to fight terrorism. And Jones says most police have never learned what to do if they're ever ordered to quarantine people who might be sick.
Say that you have a situation where a facility has been quarantined, and the father of a young family comes out and says, I'm going home. If I'm going to die, I want to die in the arms of my family. And the 21-year-old police officer is faced with using force to keep that person there, to keep them from spreading a potential contagion to large groups of people.
What if the father bolted and ran for it? I mean, have you actually thought about at what point would you use deadly force? At what point would you shoot?
The deadly force issue is one that has been quietly discussed in terms of how to manage a situation like that. The dilemma is using force against a person who has not committed a crime, who is actually a victim.
And that raises one of the touchiest issues. If terrorists did trigger a contagious outbreak, could federal and local officials contain it and also protect civil liberties? Larry Gostin's a lawyer and public health specialist at Georgetown University. Gostin says most people seem to be focusing, understandably, on how germs could poison the country. But he says government officials could hurt America by overreacting in a panic.
What we have to do is we have to act strongly, effectively, but also we have to act with tolerance, fairness, and due process of law. If you don't do that, you're no better than the terrorists.
Gostin's been trying for years to get government leaders to think about these issues. He says most ignored them. Then the terrorists attacked on September 11th, and officials at the National Governors Association called him with a sudden sense of urgency, and they asked him to draft a model law that all the states could pass to help them contain an epidemic and protect people's rights. Gostin says you might find this surprising. He finds it troubling, but he says the fact is the nation's laws do not give government officials the powers they need to fight a major outbreak.
I'm extremely worried. If there were an outbreak tomorrow and we had to rely on the public health codes we have, first of all, public health commissioners wouldn't even know what powers they had because it's so contradictory and confusing. They may have powers for AIDS, but they wouldn't have powers for anthrax, or they may have powers for tuberculosis, but not for smallpox. In effect, we would be fighting a 21st century war on germs with 19th and early 20th century legal tools.
Gostin's bill would replace that old patchwork with one new law. For instance, if terrorists triggered a smallpox outbreak tomorrow, officials in many states would not have the power to seize private buildings to relieve the crowding in hospitals. Under Gostin's law, they could seize private property, but they'd have to compensate the owners fairly. And Gostin says his bill would help prevent one of the most dangerous side effects of epidemics, discrimination. Gostin says when you study the history of smallpox and polio and tuberculosis and AIDS, you find that government policies often treat poor people and minorities differently. He says the same thing could happen after a bioterrorist attack.
So what would most likely happen is that those who are well off would be trusted to stay in their homes, take their medications, see their private physicians, and those who were poor, predominantly minority race, would be asked to go to hospitals, to, in some cases, jails or prisons, and isolated there.
But don't you think that in the middle of a national emergency, a kind of emergency, if we're talking about a biological terrorist attack that this country has never seen before, don't you assume that, you know, people are going to sweep aside these nice academic questions of law and just do what is right?
Fear is a funny thing when it comes to human beings. Fear makes us act in ways that are intolerant, that are insensitive, that are building a wall around ourselves and our communities so that others can't come in. And as you have that kind of fear, as it progresses, we're likely to see, you know, a fundamental destruction in the social fabric of the country if we don't think really carefully about how we plan for it.
Some researchers say that if government officials really prepare carefully to handle a major outbreak, they might not need a heavy hand to fight it. D.A. Henderson says they might not need to impose quarantines, even to fight smallpox.
Our experience, by and large, has been when you try to impose serious restrictions on a population for any length of time, there are just any number of people who are going to go around that. That is to say, they will find all sorts of ways to escape from that. And I would not be inclined to put a big blockade up and try to get people just to stay in that area. I would not close down the airport.
But Henderson says to manage that, government leaders and the public would have to trust each other and understand the details of the disease. For instance, a lot of people are scared to death of smallpox. TV shows make it look as if hundreds or thousands of people could be infected and not know it, so they'd wander through the streets and unwittingly spread death. But Henderson says when somebody gets infected with smallpox, they usually don't become contagious for about 10 days. They can't spread it to other people until they reach the point where they're already feeling lousy and feverish and getting a bad rash. So he says if government investigators could teach citizens to watch for symptoms and then stay home the instant they saw them, if public health officials could keep on top of every potential case, then most people could live their lives almost like normal. But Henderson says most government officials have a lot of planning to do before they're ready to handle an epidemic.
I think it's going to have to be handled and awfully well, and the population, it's going to have to be a lot of good information communicated to the population to try to allay fears and what have you, and it's still going to be a problem. In the U.S., it would not be easy, but I think it is doable, but it's not going to be easy.
I'm Daniel Zwerdling for NPR News and American Radio Works.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of NPR News and Minnesota Public Radio. And for more on this story, you can visit our website, npr.org.